Warning, you are about to listen to the greatest radio show ever. And due to contractual obligations and to shield our airwaves and corporate licensees from any semblance of liability, responsibility, and gullibility, we must tell you the views represented on this show are not necessarily those of this station or its management. This radio show contains differing points of view on current political topics, and due to the nature of its contents, it should be heard by everyone. Thank you for listening. 3, 2, 1. Now live from the Devil Radio Studios in Madison, Wisconsin, where the political party is just beginning. Welcome to the Devil's Advocate Show. Friends proving it's never personal, only politics.
Please allow me to introduce myself.
Here is your host, Mike Crute.
Welcome to the Devil's Advocates Radio Show, Dominic. A whopper of a Wednesday edition. I assure you, I assure the audience, it's going to be a really big show.
It's a big show. Happy hump day to you, Crudy Evan, working the board, our fair audience. Happy March 1st, man. It's a beautiful day here in Milwaukee.
Well, Dominic, a couple of things make for a big show. Audience participation, always important. And the phone lines, they're always open and toll-free for your participation at 844-967-2789. So take some good callers and occasionally CJ. But it also takes some fine guests. And we got to find one today. Our good friend, John Nichols from The Nation, from the Cap Times, joining us at 4:30 Central Time. But Dom, today we're going to start with the most important Supreme Court race of our lifetime. At least the most important Supreme Court spring race? No, they're always in the spring. So I back to the default most important Supreme Court race of our lifetime. It's for the soul of the Wisconsin Supreme Court, Dom. And the candidates are comparing notes. What will they or won't they do if their grandiose donors should happen to come before the Wisconsin Supreme Court? Would they recuse? Now, it seems to me like Dan Kelly, and we've got some coverage of this. We'll start here. Do you remember what the Prosser rule was, Dom? The Prosser precedent, if you will, on recusal. Prosser, a former disgraced, I think he was disgraced, Supreme Court
Was
justice.
That the guy who choked his co-worker? Yes, yes. Allegedly, yes. What? That you could have to recuse yourself, right? No one can kick you off? Is that what you're getting at?
Well, if you'll recall, Prosser actually had grandiose donors to his campaign.
Right. Yeah.
$2.5 million, Wisconsin Club for Growth, I believe, if my memory serves. And then what do you know? Janet Protasiewicz has received about $2.5 million from the Wisconsin Democratic Party. Now, Protasiewicz stated today, if there was litigation involving the Wisconsin Democratic Party, she would recuse if elected to the court.
Wow, that seems honorable.
Well, that's quite different than the stance taken by David Prosser. If you'll recall, the choke artist David Prosser, despite the fact that there were litigants before the court that had given him millions of dollars, the precedent that he set for recusal, it'd been over a year. Doesn't affect me anymore.
I cashed those checks 12 months ago.
Well, of course, Dominic,
I barely remember how much they gave me.
The litigation process took significantly over a year, but the standard he set for himself is, well, that was last year's donors. So therefore, I will not recuse. Dom, a little coverage here at the Journal Sentinel, Molly Beck. As partisan groups pour in millions, making this year's state Supreme Court race the most expensive judicial race ever run, the two candidates seeking a seat at the state's highest court are taking different approaches. There's a little
that's a nice way to put it.
To how they will handle cases involving the state's political parties that are backing their campaigns. Now, these are supposed to be nonpartisan races, right, Dom?
Right.
Anything but. Milwaukee County Judge Janet Protasiewicz, the race's liberal-backed candidate, said Wednesday she would recuse herself from hearing lawsuits brought by or against the Democratic Party of Wisconsin because of the millions of dollars the state party has funneled into her campaign for the state's highest court. Now, I don't know if I'd make a blanket recusal decision like that. I mean, there are a number of times the Wisconsin Democratic Party is the vessel of a lawsuit to challenge bad Republican litigation or legislation, more accurately. Now, Dom.
Well, it's one thing to say it now. It's a whole other thing when you're actually on the bench and you can pretty much do what you want for 10 years.
Well, that's the attitude currently taken by Dan Kelly, transparently. Conservative candidate Dan Kelly, a former justice, a former appointee of Scott Walker, would not make a similar pledge to step away from cases involving the state Republican Party, which supported his 2020 campaign with funding and office space, instead saying he would decide, you know, on a case-by-case basis, Dom. Now, the state Democratic Party, as mentioned, put $2.5 million into the Milwaukee County Judge's campaign, according to Protus Sawitz, a level she said is high enough to affect the public's perception of her neutrality.
Yes, even the perception is important to Judge Protus Sawitz.
It did matter a pill of beans to David Prosser, because I certainly perceive David Prosser to be corrupted by the multiple million-dollar coordinated efforts. And then those very same litigants came before his court, yet he did not recuse. Who was the other guy that didn't recuse? Gableman. Oh, yeah, that guy.
We'll get to him later.
I don't know that the public could really say she's fair when she's received $2.5 million from a particular entity, Protus Sawitz told reporters, following an event hosted by the Wisconsin Counties Association in Madison. Following a separate appearance Wednesday at the Counties Association annual legislative conference, Kelly said, "The decision to recuse is an individual one. One of the important things that we can be looking at as we look forward to this election is electing someone whose character you can trust." And recusal is a matter of character. See, he thinks he has it, and she therefore lacks it. I will look at that issue very closely in any case that would potentially implicate the Republican Party or anyone else who makes contributions. Unless it's Dick Uihlein, because we're swell.
That money's going to pay off for you. Kelly has also worked for the GOP, including providing legal advice to former Republican Party of Wisconsin Chairman Andrew Hitt in December of 2020 about the Republicans' efforts to organize a group of electors for former President Donald Trump despite his election loss, a nationwide plan that became the target of a U.S. House investigation into the January 6th attack on the U.S. Capitol. Kelly said Wednesday he could not discuss the nature of the work, citing attorney-client privilege, and characterized his advice
Attorney-client privilege? Well, I think this case would probably be subject to a crime fraud exception to attorney-client privilege, Dom. Hope that gets litigated.
Very, very well may. Kelly said Wednesday, citing would not because of the client attorney-client privilege, and characterized his advice as a 30-minute phone call to Andrew Hitt. Now, he was paid, Crudy. Now, I'll go back to the original source reporting from Daniel Bice back on the 17th of February. He was paid nearly $120,000 by state Republican Party and the Republican National Committee over the past 2 years.
So, clearly, he's lying, Dom. $120,000 for 30 minutes work, Dom, what... Is that $240,000 an hour?
There is a breakdown. According to federal election records, this is from Bice's article, the RNC paid Kelly $110,000 from March to December of 22 for legal and compliance issues. That included $40,000 received from the RNC after he announced he was running for the open high court seat. He got another $8,500 from the state Republican Party between January of 21 and July of 22. So the majority of that money came from the RNC, the National Party.
My bad. He's making $17,068. Oh, make it $69.10 per hour? That's some great legal advice. And as near as I can tell, Dom, the legal advice, the 30-minute phone call with Andrew Hitt, he advised the Republican Party, and Andrew Hitt as the chairman then of the Republican Party, it's well if you want to commit the crime of fraud.
Now, my assumption. Has that been reported and confirmed? We don't know what he said.
No, because he won't tell us what he said to Andrew Hitt.
And we know what his clients ultimately did. And Andrew Hitt, although apparently was very hesitant to do it, at the end of the day, he went along with the conspiracy. He went along with the fraud. Continuing here from Molly Beck's piece at the Journal Sentinel, Wisconsin's legitimate electors have sued the Trump electors in a case that could end up at the state Supreme Court. Kelly said Wednesday he would recuse himself from the case if his legal advice to Hitt were part of that lawsuit. Well, how are we going to know what your legal advice to Hitt is going to be unless there's discovery, unless it comes out, unless the attorney-client privilege is pierced, right? Unless there's a crime fraud exception, right? I mean, I'm just curious, how would we find out, Mr. Kelly, what your advice was?
Well, here's the testimony of Andrew Hitt. I think he, Dan Kelly, started in August of 2020. Well, that'd be quite a bit before that 30-minute phone call, Dom.
Yep.
Hitt testified under oath, even though Kelly's first payment did not come for another 5 months. Hitt said Kelly had given the title special counsel. You know, in April of 2020, through the summer, as a result of the pandemic, there were at one point seven different pieces of litigation going on regarding election laws and procedures. It was too much to be able to keep up with. So I brought him on to kind of help manage that and advise on it. And then there is the whole coup thing, Dom.
It's all part of it, man.
Let's not forget, 10 Wisconsinites signed on criminally, in my assessment, as fraudulent Trump electors.
To be part of the seditious conspiracy.
Legal advice was received from now Supreme Court candidate Dan Kelly, for which he was paid, according to Kelly, if it's a 30-minute phone call, he's getting paid $17,000 an hour by the state GOP, telling him it's just swell to commit the crime of fraud and try to overturn the U.S. Constitution. And by the way, if you come before me, I'm not recusing. Come back with us. More Devil's Advocates, a whopper of a Wednesday edition. And if the band you're in starts playing different tunes, I'll see you on the dark side of the moon.
Yeah. Hell yeah. When they go low, we get high. The Devil's Advocates.
And we are back from the 420 break. Thank you for listening to the Devil's Advocates radio show. You can join us on the lines at 844-967-2789. Crudy, that brings me back to summertime in La Crosse at college, baby.
You know, it's been 50 years. 50 years ago today, Dark Side of the Moon, Pink Floyd dropped Dark Side of the Moon. We ended the last segment with the very, you know, the namesake. But do you know it's been 30 years plus since Dr. Dre dropped that tune, dude?
Like 31 years, I think. Crazy.
It is glorious today. You know we'd be out. Joe would have his shirt off. He'd be out sunning on the sidewalk.
Steve and Chevy playing some hacky sack. Yeah, good.
SEPA.
Can't wait. Can't wait for the heat to come, babe. Today's a beautiful day.
It's like fall spring. You know, it's one of the first fall spring days. But now it's March, dude. And March is coming in like a lamb. It's not coming in like a lion. It's coming in a glorious, sunny, nice fashion. It's supposed to be warm again tomorrow, Dom. Might have to hit the road a bit. Maybe drop the top. See what happens.
We'll see what happens.
You can join us. We got, who is it? John Nichols. Our friend John Nichols from The Nation, from the Cap Times. Coming soon, Dom. But you could be in this little short segment at 844-967-2789. Dom, you know, the tab's still running. And that other guy that wouldn't recuse, Gable.
Oh, that other Wisconsin, former Wisconsin Supreme Court justice? Yeah, yeah.
Corrupted. Supreme Court Justice Michael Gableman. More coverage. Corrine Hess at the Journal Sentinel. Wisconsin taxpayers' cost for the fruitless partisan review of the 2020 presidential election. Well, it's still running. The tab's still growing, Dom. Dane County Circuit Court Judge Diane Shipper has ordered Assembly Speaker Robin Voss to pay $135,574 in legal fees to the liberal watchdog group American Oversight for the group's successful lawsuit to obtain records from former Justice Michael Gableman's 14-month probe, bringing the taxpayer-paid cost to Gableman's review to about $2.5 million.
Oh, my God!
So, Prosser got about $2.5 million from Wisconsin Club for Growth. Protasiewicz got it from the Democratic Party. And Gableman got it from we, the taxpayers. Son of a...
And Corey Hess, love the reporting, and I just don't know. Yes, he ordered Speaker Voss to pay the $135,574, but Speaker Voss ain't paying $135,574, even if he appeals and loses, because that's coming out of the taxpayers.
Yeah, it comes out of our ass. Voss said he will likely appeal the order, Dom. Here's his quote. Also, I'm going to do the sanctimonious, contemptuous Robin Voss voice. How surprising that a liberal Dane County judge would agree with a liberal organization funded by unions and liberal activists, Voss said. I'm sure we'll end up appealing that because the fees are outrageous. Remember when James Spott made a similar argument? He was there in court representing Gableman, I believe. And Spott was questioning the legal fees in this very case. And they said, well, how much are you making?
Right, we're paying him
$450 an hour, I believe, at the time. But Robin Voss and Gableman, through his legal counsel, which was Bob, they were questioning the legal cost of, you know, the victorious people in court. Losers well, don't get to say so well, much, do they?
All they wanted was, you know, open records. All they wanted was this information that they were should have received. Curry, I'll jump in. In the lawsuit, Voss argued that no fees should be awarded to a nonprofit corporation like American Oversight because of the statutes on Illinois and Ohio, or alternatively that if fees must be awarded, that American Oversight's fees should be reduced. Quote, Wisconsin public records law is not ambiguous, and its interpretation requires no assistance from Illinois or Ohio courts, Shipper ruled. I reject Voss's invitation to apply those states' laws, and under Wisconsin law, I award American Oversight its reasonable fees using the lodestar approach. This is a two-step approach in which courts first determine the number of hours reasonably expended on the litigation multiplied by a reasonable hourly rate.
Dom, it's
not
even
so very logical.
It's not even the first time a court has found that Voss and Gableman subject the taxpayers to paying these otherwise fair and reasonable legal fees. It's the next paragraph I was trying to set
I thought you were going to jump in. Curdy, in March of 2022, Dane County Judge Frank Remington ruled Voss and Gableman violated the state's public records law. Let's stop for a minute. All right, the Assembly Speaker, right? Republican here in Wisconsin, and a former Supreme Court justice hired by the Assembly Speaker to, you know, what, perpetuate this lie, this ruse that something happened with the election, you know, using taxpayer dollars to do so, to support this big lie theory from, what, pressure from Donald Trump. Well, those folks who are supposed to be the lawmakers and the law interpreters violated public records laws. And now they, through us, through them, through their malfeasance, we got to fork over a potentially $135,000. And it's probably going to be more because Voss says he's going to appeal. But
remember the subpoenas? Remember when Gableman tried to, what, subpoena mayors?
From
Democratic mayors, of course, because it's always on the other partisan side. They're the ones that won't participate in my charade. And he, what, Dom? He wanted them in prison, thrown in jail for failing to deal with the subpoenas. And they were often not delivered. They were written poorly, often with spelling errors. We're paying Gableman. Gableman was getting 11 grand a month. Well, you know, until Robin Foss cut that down to 5,500 a month. And as Michael Mastelman, a often quoted political attorney, says, this whole effort, this Gableman thing, it's a political stunt made even worse because a guy that sat on the highest court of Wisconsin was inept. Corrupt. We didn't even know how to follow the law, and now we're paying for it. Even the guy that hired him eventually called him out and finally admitted that. It means Robin Voss. Come back. It's a Whopper of a Wednesday with John Nichols joining us next.
This staffer stated that Senator Johnson wished to hand deliver to the vice president the fake electors' votes from Michigan and Wisconsin.
Think you know politics? Think again. Welcome to the Devil's Advocates.
Welcome back to the Devil's Advocates Radio Show, a Whopper of a Wednesday edition. Got much love for our next guest. He's our friend, John Nichols from The Nation, from the Cap Times. John, welcome back to the Devil's Advocates.
Hey, John.
Good to be with you, too.
Thanks, well, John, man. I think it's the first time since the spring primary election was held here in the state of Wisconsin. I noted from your writing at the Cap Times, you took notice, I think the state of Wisconsin took notice, to a very candid Janet Protasiewicz, Judge Protasiewicz. She obviously handily won the primary. John, do you think it's just because she didn't, you know, pussyfoot around the issue? She basically blurted out the quiet parts?
I think it was very helpful to her, sure. Look, the bottom line is that Wisconsin has had a very frustrating reality with Supreme Court races. We know that the people running for the court have opinions. We know that they have values. It's no mystery. In fact, they end up being endorsed by, you know, people on opposite sides of the political divide, opposite sides of the ideological divide. So what Janet Protasiewicz did was say, look, you know, these are some of my values. I'm not going to tell you how I'm going to judge cases, but this is where I'm coming from. And it was very public. It was very obvious. She was attacked for it, you know, really aggressively attacked by her opponents, including Dan Kelly, the guy she'll run against in April. And the voters looked at that and they said, I think we're going to vote for Protasiewicz. And they gave her, you know, almost half the votes in the primary. And in many counties around the state, gave her, you know, a clear majority of the vote. So I don't think people are too bothered by her stating her values.
John, Rebecca Dallet here in the state of Wisconsin, Supreme Court Justice Rebecca Dallet, she faced a primary once upon a time. She had Tim Burns, yep. I believe. And, you know, she ran out there and she marched in the Women's March and she stood for what she stood for. And she was very clear. And when I met Janet Protasiewicz, she was introduced by Rebecca Dallet at the Democratic Party of Wisconsin summer conference, if you will. So,
yep.
It seems like she's taken some of the advice, the lead of Dallet. And I think Kurovsky was very candid in many of her assessments when she beat Dan Kelly the last time. John, do you think this is how these judicial candidates must run? Obviously, it's no longer coyness. It's no longer a nonpartisan race. It's let the best partisan win. And you better tell them who you are so they don't get confused.
Well, I don't necessarily know that it's partisan, and that's an interesting dynamic here. Stating your values isn't necessarily taking a partisan stand. For instance, to give you an example, if you say that you are for fair elections, right, and you don't think that maps, you know, for election districts should be gerrymandering, does that make you a Democrat?
Well, what if you say the maps are rigged? Because most of the Republicans have the benefit of those rigged maps. They're not against them, John.
Well, they may not be against them, but two things that are important to point out here. Number one, they are rigged. There's no question of that. And so unless stating the truth is a partisan stance, that doesn't make you a partisan to say they're rigged. And number two, to say that you think they should be fair, you think that they should be competitive. Polling shows that an overwhelming majority of Democrats think that, but also huge numbers of Republicans think that. So it's not a partisan stand to state your values. Now, what is partisan and what is, you know, rigorously partisan is to not state your values and, you know, not say where you're coming from and claim that you're just going to, you know, look at every case as it comes. You've got no opinions. You're not, you don't have a thought in your head. Right. And then take huge amounts of money from extreme right wing forces who, of course, absolutely know what you're going to do. So I'm far more concerned from a partisan or ideological standpoint with those who lie to us than I am with those who tell us the truth.
Folks, you're listening to the Devil's Advocates Radio Show. John Nichols, our friend from The Nation and The Cap Times, joining us. John, always a pleasure. Keeping my eyes on, you know, some of the right-wing media, we discussed an article on the air yesterday from the National Review. A local boy made good here, Luther Ray Abel from Sheboygan, went to Lawrence. A William F. Buckley fellow in political journalism was just lighting up on nationalreview.com Wisconsin Republicans. I mean, basically saying put down the old fashions and go win an election. The, you know, this party's in disarray. I mean, hell, the title was Wisconsin GOP Supreme Losers, John. And that, and look at the amount of money being spent. We're up to $18 million. We have, what, 5 weeks left before the actual general election in April. What do you read from the reactions of conservatives and the money coming into this race?
Well, I thought the National Review piece was an honest take, right? It was, if you read the piece, the guy would very much like to see, or certainly seemed, you know, would like to see a conservative on the court.
Right.
I mean, this wasn't some liberal writing this article picking on the Republicans or something like that. But what he was, you know, frankly saying is that they're doing a pretty lousy job of it. A couple things that are worth noting. And I don't usually quote Mark Belling, but, you know, Mark Belling before the primary was very, very blunt in saying that, you know, Jennifer Doerr was a clearly stronger candidate than Dan Kelly. A, she's actually been a trial judge, which is something Dan Kelly's never been. He's a political appointee of Scott Walker. And B, you know, she had a little bit more just basic appeal from a standpoint of experience, from the way she communicated, et cetera, than Kelly. And this is, and yet the a lot of the Republicans clearly went for Kelly because they thought he was absolutely rock solid, the most right-wing potential candidate. That in and of itself was, you know, that's putting your ideological purity test ahead of your, you know, potential winning of an election. And I think that a lot of national Republicans, a lot of national conservatives think that's a pretty foolish approach to things. The other thing about the article that I thought was quite fascinating was the line, whatever the Democrats are paying Ben Wickler, they should pay him more.
Yeah.
And, you know, because that's pretty strong acknowledgement. And if you read the article, you got that flavor. That an argument that the Republican Party of Wisconsin, you know, in this very closely divided state, it may still pull off an occasional win, but that it's been on something of a losing streak for a while. And where one of the most clear evidences of that losing streak is to be found is in the Supreme Court races. Remember, in 2018, right, you had Dalit win. In 2020, you had Karofsky win, right? They don't win every race, it's true, but they do look to be ahead in this one. And so you really have a situation where it looks as if, after many years of bumbling, the Democrats being the ones who are bumbling, looks like the Democrats have figured out a formula for running these Supreme Court races, a way to do it, whereas the Republicans are struggling.
Well, John, we haven't seen a competitive conservative primary since I can't remember when. And I think in no small part it was the grandiose giving of the U lines to the Dan Kelly supportive super PAC. We heard the ads running. I mean, hell, they bought them in Madison on Devil Radio, John. I don't know what the hell they were thinking. But I was more than willing to encourage the effort. I clearly thought that Dan Kelly was the weaker of the two conservative candidates. I mean, he's already run and lost, significantly lost. So I guess, do you factor that in, John? I mean, right-wing talk radio kind of had Doros back, but Uline had Dan Kelly's back with a lot of ads.
Look, you know, I think that the Ulines were out there. They were clearly making their case, right? They were clearly doing their push for Dan Kelly, and that helped them a lot. That put him in the competitive position. There's no doubt of that. But at the end of the day, Dan Kelly also benefited from the fact that he's been highly engaged with the Walker camp for a long time, right? Clearly they were pulling for him. So he had that combination of money and some inside the party organization. But the fundamental here, the thing to remember is that the Republican Party, in this case, they weren't going to put their thumb on the scale. They weren't going to choose one of these candidates over the other. That wouldn't have made sense. But what they should you should hope that there would be some recognition of the problem that all this outside money plays, because you've got a situation here where you had, amazingly enough, the Uline money coming in for Dan Kelly, and then you had liberal groups coming in, taking shots at Doro, right? Because I think people did recognize Doro was a stronger candidate. Put all the pieces together, and they kind of had the perfect wrong scenario for the Republicans, right? And it was largely driven by outside money. Maybe, I know this is hard to imagine, maybe some Republicans might even wake up to the idea that all this outside cash isn't necessarily a good thing in our politics.
I love whoever Dick Uline loves, because they never win in general. We got a fine guest. He is John Nichols from The Nation, from the Cap Times locally. John, what do you attribute the record-setting spring primary turnout? We know about the Dobbs decision, but I mean, the Democrats have struggled mightily to turn out theirs, even in the midterms, John. Now they turn them out in the midterms, the spring primary, to record numbers. Is that, do you think, almost entirely attributable to the Dobbs decision?
No, I don't think it's entirely attributable to the Dobbs decision. I think there are other factors that have been in play. Look, we had a Trump administration that upset a lot of people. And you looked at the 2018 election, the 2020 election, you saw before the Dobbs decision that Democrats had great advances in races for Congress and then, defeated Donald Trump for the presidency in admittedly a close election, but they did. So I think there's been a bit of a streak here. I also think that, there are concerns about the health of our democracy. There are concerns about a host of other issues. And then you put Dobbs on top of that. Now, Dobbs becomes a big deal because of a whole bunch of factors. Yes, it does begin to potentially shift some, usually Republican voters out of the Republican column over toward the Democrats. That's a big deal. Two, it also, there's some good evidence that it mobilizes young people. It gets young voters excited. And for Democrats, that's always been one of the biggest challenges politically. They just don't have, or they haven't historically been able to get that youth vote, people under 30 especially, out at the same level that older people come out. Now with Dobbs, you're starting to see at least some evidence that it does mobilize young people. And notably in the Supreme Court primary, you had lines of voters, not just on the Madison campus, but on the UW-Eau Claire campus and other ones around the state, of students coming out to vote in a Supreme Court primary. Right. I mean, that's something that's different, right? And I think that is rooted in Dobbs.
John, do you think the effectiveness of right-wing talk radio in turning out the GOP base, has that been blunted at all? Obviously, there was a little bit of a divided electorate, belling like Doro and some of the party insiders like Dan Kelly. Are they losing some of their juice, John, or just the wrong elective cycle?
Well, I think one of the things that happens, one of the mistakes that's made in politics is to take one election or even a couple of elections and then say, okay, now we've got to, you know, it's, we've realigned. It's a whole new era. And I remember some of my Democratic friends saying after Barack Obama's big win in 2008, well, Republicans are never going to win again, right? And then came 2010. So I'd be a little careful about that. But I do think there's a combination of factors in play that are getting young people out to vote. And that's a, and combine that with some shifting out of the Republican column, especially by suburban women. This is a pretty good period for progressives and for Democrats. And I suspect that is going to have an influence on the Supreme Court race.
John Nichols, our fine guest. Stick around, John. More of the Devil's Advocates. We love when John Nichols comes around.
Sixty percent of the time, they're right every time. The Devil's Advocates.
And we are back. Thank you for listening to the Devil's Advocates radio show. Make sure you check us out on the socials at on Twitter at Devil Radio, Facebook, The Devil's Advocates Radio. You can find the podcast on Spotify, Apple, Google, Stitcher, of course, the civicmedia.us shows tab. Look for The Devil's Advocates.
Dominic, it's going to be a good day. We had John Nichols. He stuck around. We appreciate it, John. John, I know I'm looking ahead, but the Republicans are bringing their presidential circus to Milwaukee, the first debate this August. That ain't so far in the distance, John. Do you see this being a battle royale between Donald Trump and Ron DeSantis? Will there be lots of participants, or will it be mano a mano? May the best conservative win.
I think there'll be a few. I think there are definitely going to be other candidates in this race. Nikki Haley has already announced. Mike Pompeo is effectively running. There's, you know, if you go out to Iowa on any weekend and go to a county Republican steak fry, you're going to run into half dozen Republicans, usually senators, who would like to be considered, including Tim Scott, senator from South Carolina. So, yeah, I think you'll see more people on the stage. I don't think there's any doubt of that. And the interesting thing is that's good for Trump, right? Because Trump likes a crowded field. A one-on-one race is more complex for him. He still is pretty good, you know, whether you like him or not. He's good at debating. And the way that he debates is usually that he targets one candidate in a field, goes after that candidate, knocks him out. If you remember what he did to Scott Walker in the 2016 race, it was pretty devastating. And he did it to Rand Paul, and he did it to Jeb Bush, and he did it to Marco Rubio. He went one by one. And so he likes that crowded field. But if it's a one-on-one with DeSantis, it becomes a somewhat different game, because the fact of the matter is that back in 2016, last time Trump had serious primary competition, he didn't really get much more than a third of the vote in those early primaries. It was well into the race where he started to get, you know, getting close to half the vote. And so I think a one-on-one with DeSantis would be fascinating. It'd probably beneficial to DeSantis in that situation. But bottom line is Milwaukee's going to have an important debate. And because I think it's fair to say at this point, we do not know who the Republican nominee for president in 2024 is going to be. If you'd asked me 6 months ago, a year ago, I would have said it's going to be Trump. No doubt about it. But Trump has really weakened a lot. He's had all these legal problems, of course, but just a lot of other factors, I think, have, you know, kind of pushed him more toward extremes. Now, the final thing I'd say on it is be careful about assuming that DeSantis will necessarily be the guy who beats Trump, because I still am unsure about whether DeSantis translates to a national audience. He pulled it off in Florida, but I don't necessarily know that that means he's going to be able to pull it off elsewhere.
It reminds you of Scott Walker, doesn't it? I mean, DeSantis just rolled out his Courage to be Free book. I watched Stephen Colbert last night flip the title like seven different ways because it was so meaningless. It's just like conservative buzzwords. But I think Scott Walker is the perfect parallel. Scott Walker looked good on paper. Ron DeSantis looks good on paper. But when you actually meet the man, there's a complete lack of charisma, John. People still like a guy with charisma, don't they?
No, I think they do, and I think Republicans especially like that. And so, look, I think you're exactly right. I've thought of this over the last year or so myself, or pondered the same notion, because Scott Walker, remember, when he got into that presidential race in 2015, he jumped in. He went right up to the top of the polls, right? I mean, because Republicans knew his name, and they knew the backstory a little bit. They'd heard a lot about him on Fox going back to 2011, things of that nature. Then they actually started meeting him out in Iowa and up in New Hampshire. And you notice that even before Trump went after Scott Walker, Walker's numbers started to tick downward. And, you know, obviously ended up at negative zero. But there's some evidence that that the Republican Party and the conservative media, they will run somebody up the flagpole. They'll say, you know, wow, this is the answer. This is the hot commodity. And then when that person, you know, actually gets out to the base of the Republican Party, it doesn't translate all that well. And I think there's a real chance that that's the case with DeSantis.
Folks, you're listening to the Devil's Advocates radio show. That's John Nichols, our friend. John, we talk about this race, and we got just a few minutes left here, my friend. And you kind of breeze by the legal, you know, challenges that he has. And I got to tell you, man, they're piling up, and they're piling up quick. I mean, E. Jean Carroll's supposed to go to her case, goes to court in April, my understanding. We, of course, mm-hmm. Jack Smith investigating for the insurrection, the coup, as well as this documents crimes. You got New York Attorney General Tish James. So you got her $250 million lawsuit still out there. Manhattan DA Alvin Bragg is still sniffing around after getting a couple of convictions against Trump Organization entities. Some of these things are going to start falling into line, John. How do you think that's going to impact this race?
Well, I think it does have an impact on the race because Donald Trump he's carrying a lot of baggage. There's no question of that. Remember, this guy has never won the popular vote in a presidential race. He lost by, you know, 3 million votes in 2016. He lost by, you know, roughly 7 million votes in 2020. He prevailed because of very narrow advantages in a handful of states, including Wisconsin. That was undone in 2020. On balance, Trump has been on a bit of a, you know, kind of a downward, you know, trend for a while. The 2018 elections went badly for Republicans. 2020, Trump got beat. 2022, Democrats did better than expected. And so I think there is sort of a little bit of fatigue on the part of the Republicans as regards Donald Trump. And the legal issues just add to that. They create a sense that maybe this just isn't the right guy anymore.
It's John, short on time. I got to throw it out there and let you comment.
Okay.
The legal travails of Fox News. I can give you like a minute, John. Do you trust Foxy News anymore?
Well, you know, look, the Fox folks are an interesting bunch of folks because there is some diversity on Fox News, right? You have some people who are, you know, a little more newsy, some people are a little less so. But boy, when you get the cynicism of it coming out as these emails have reviewed, you know, I'll just say this. You know, I think it's very interesting that Paul Ryan is on the board of Fox, and that, you know, he somehow comes out looking better than the journalists. And I never thought I'd be saying that about Paul Ryan.
Come on, he's just cashing K Street checks. John Nichols.
Well, I think that's it.
Checks in the mail, fella. Appreciate you coming by here on the Devil's Advocates. John, you got any big plans coming up politically?
I'm going to San Francisco and then to Tucson to do book events with Bernie Sanders.
That is awesome, man. I hear he's getting crapped on by Ross Story of all the news organizations. Oh, well. John Nichols, you work at a good one over at The Nation and the Cap Times. Thanks for coming around, John. Have a great, great day.
Thanks, John.
It's not going to be the days of Paul Ryan and Trey Gowdy.